right, everyone. Welcome back to the Crypto 101 podcast. Pizza Mind here, rolling solo today, but not alone. I am graced with the presence of one of the best minds in crypto, one of the most complicated projects that humanity has ever dreamed of. We're here with Dominic Williams, the founder and chief scientist over at Dfinity. Finally, we've got a chance to learn about this amazing project and what you're doing over here. Dominic, welcome to the Crypto 101 podcast.
Well, firstly, thanks, Aaron, for the kind words. I'm pleased to be here.
So tell us a little bit about your background. What were you doing before you started the internet computer?
Well, there's always been this duality. On the one hand, I'm very entrepreneurial. On the other hand, I'm a bit of a nerd and I like theoretical computer science, distributed computing, that kind of thing. So, crypto became the perfect place for me. But the last big thing I did before going full-time in crypto was create a kids game, an MMO called Fight My Monster, and it grew to several million users. And this was significant because I also developed a lot of the systems that supported that game and a very high degree of interactivity between its users. So during the course of that, I created the first sort of production system using something called Cassandra, which is a decentralized database, which makes it very, very easy to scale out data storage and processing, and also created a horizontally scalable game server that could arbitrarily connect, arbitrarily forward events between millions of users who had some prior connection. So actually, that was a very nice segue into crypto because I had, I'd seen blockchain coming in a way many years before just by luck. In 1999, I was creating actually what would have been one of the world's first cloud platforms. It was a online storage system called Smart Drives. And that involved cryptography, naturally, for the purposes of security. I even tried to create my own sort of early certificate system. And I was using this library called Crypto++, created by a guy called Wei Dai. And you can still find his website. On that website, which is unchanged from 20 years ago, as far as I can see, there's this thing called B-Money, description of this thing called B-Money. And I read this and wow, I could see there was something there. I just didn't have time and I couldn't really grasp it, at that time. Later on, I created this game. I started building in like 2009 and then switched to crypto full-time end of 2013. I was able to sort of bring these things together. Like, when I saw Bitcoin really take off in April 2013, and more and more people were coming into the field, I was sort of primed, if you like, and instantly decided that I wanted to be involved. And then by the end of 2013, I was, investigating ways of, improving blockchains, making them faster, making them more scalable.
Did you know, even back then in 2013, 2014, that the crypto and blockchain space was going to explode and be where it is today?
Yes. I mean, I think I went through some of the same phases as everybody else. So, that began with Satoshi's white paper, right? And, I read that and reread it. And I'm like, wow, this is such a beautiful idea. Such a beautiful idea. Both technically speaking and in terms of this idea of creating an independent money that existed in cyberspace that, governments couldn't control. And, like many people, back then I began to imagine that Bitcoin would take over the world. And there was like a sort of ladder, I suppose, that was the first rung, if you like. But soon I began realizing that you could apply blockchain to many different things. And the world's computer, and I still love Bitcoin, by the way, I still believe in digital gold, but the world computer concept was just this idea of Ockham just stunning to me. And it actually came from the early Ethereum community. They didn't pursue it with the same passion, but I think because I've been developing systems and services for so many years, I started writing code when I was like 11. I'd been through the whole internet thing. I saw the potential of a world computer in ways that others didn't. And I just saw that it had to be built, and that once it really was built and running in its best form, inevitably, people would start rebuilding systems and services on it, and it would be a very, very impactful thing. So that's why I focused on that particular thing. And I do believe that, a world computer is the end game for IT. And if you like, the end game for Web3. I mean, sometimes I refer to it as blockchain singularity. I believe that, if you scroll forward a sufficient number of years, the world's going to be building on a public network, and it's going to be a blockchain. And that blockchain is going to be fast enough, efficient enough, and, be able to serve web so that you don't need anything else to build. You don't need Amazon Web Services. You don't need Microsoft Azure. You don't need Google. You don't need databases, web servers, obviously not firewalls, right? Because if you build on a blockchain, smart contracts are tamper-proof, just like Bitcoin. That's one of their great advantages. So you certainly don't need firewalls. That's the future. And it'll provide individuals and organizations with absolutely enormous advantages over today's IT stack.
Let's talk about that, because that is the future. But right now we're in the present, where distributed computers do make up Amazon Web Services. And Amazon Web Services, for those of you who don't know, is the biggest vertical that Amazon has. It's bigger than their store. It's bigger than Amazon Prime. Amazon Web Services makes them the most money out of everything Amazon does. And in fact, there's all kinds of crypto apps that are using Amazon Web Services. But what are the dangers of doing that? What are the dangers of running your blockchain nodes on Amazon Web Services or Google Cloud or Microsoft Azure or any of those other things?
Lots and lots. Well, firstly, just to add some color to your point about Amazon Web Services being the biggest part of Amazon. Currently, this year, the world is expected to pay $482 billion for cloud services. The UK government spends $1 billion a year on cloud services alone. But you can add to that all kinds of things like, people pay $172 billion a year for cybersecurity. And you can imagine, you can just keep on adding like the cost of databases, middleware, this and that, other. In fact, IT as a whole cost the world or will cost the world in 2020, $5 trillion. According to Gartner research. And that number's continuously growing. So IT is fantastically expensive. It presents a very juicy total addressable market for something like the internet computer, because we believe most of it should be abandoned and people should rebuild on blockchain. We believe that it's very clear why that people are going to want to do that. Once you have a blockchain that's fast enough, efficient enough, infinitely scalable, and so on, smart contracts simplify everything. You're building on a public network, so remember, smart contracts are just blockchain code. It's a slightly unfortunate name. It makes you sound it. The word smart contracts makes you think it's something to do with the law, but it's just code, right? It's tamper-proof code on the blockchain. So you're building on a public network. You're not a captive customer anymore. If you build on Amazon Web Services, your foundations, are residing on a private company, right? You're gonna have to rebuild everything somewhere else to move. So it's public. So you're not a captive customer. It's unstoppable, right? So and I think this is something you're alluding to too, with the dangers of building on Amazon, it's unstoppable. So, you know, your systems keep on ticking. The systems you build are tamper-proof. You don't have to worry about someone hacking your systems and putting and encrypting them with ransomware or hacking them in some other way. They're tamper-proof. You don't even need a firewall to protect them. Systems are composable. So, you know, you can compose systems made with smart contracts. Interoperability is extremely easy. All these smart contracts exist within the same blockchain universe. And you can build systems in the same way that you build software. You know, you build software from components and libraries. You can build systems from system components, and that's revolutionary. Obviously, you can process value as data in code, you know, thanks to tokenization. And you could say the same for identity. There's a whole lot of innovations coming down the pipe there too. And of course, and this is very important, we'll get to it. When you build with smart contracts, if you want, you can make your code autonomous. And that means you can create code that has an independent existence, isn't controlled by a person or organization. Maybe it's immutable, it never changes, or maybe it can be updated, but only by a community DAO, decentralized autonomous organization. And that's very important to the future of Web3. So, you know, we think it's inevitable that people are going to move to blockchain. You know, we think this is the end game. You know, all the, you know, having the vast majority of humanity's systems and services on blockchain is the end game for Web3, and it's what we call blockchain singularity. But on the way there, we also think that, you know, on the way there, of course, what matters now is, you know, the early adopt, you know, what's coming, you know, what early on in Web3, and that's things like SocialFi, you know, the blend of social media and DeFi, GameFi, blend of gaming and social media and DeFi, sorry, I mean, play to earn, things like that, metaverse, all these things, or just plain old DeFi. It's very, very dangerous for early Web3 pioneers to be building on the cloud. And that's what happens today outside the internet computer universe. You know, when you hear people saying they're building on Ethereum, they're building on Solana, they're building on Avalanche, what they really mean is they're building a cloud application. All the data is on cloud, all the processes on cloud, and just a few little things are occasionally transferred to the blockchains, like tokens or, you know, maybe the hash of a NFT. And the problem is that, well, there's a number of problems. The most obvious problem is that, you know, Amazon Web Services is proving unreliable. And when Amazon Web Services goes down, so do those dApps. Right. And everyone says, well, I thought this was decentralized. Why is it going down? But this happened, you know, famously, and the mainstream media picked up on it with DYDX. You know, well, Amazon's gone down and this exchange, this decentralized exchange running on Ethereum has gone down. Like, what is going on? But actually, it's you know, it goes even deeper than that. So let's just run through some of the other really big problems with this architecture. Obviously, it's not secure. Like, if someone hacks into your cloud account, or maybe just one of the people running the service turns evil, well, guess what? They can steal your tokens. Like, you know, I could go, if I hack into the website of OpenSea, say, I can insert malicious code into the page, and that can interact with your MetaMask wallet, right? And basically steal your tokens. And something I forget.
We just had that happen recently where there
was a problem. It did just happen. I think, yeah, they got in via Cloudflare, I think. And what they were doing is they were only intermittently injecting the malicious code into the page. So it'd be like kind of you'd go there, get your token stolen. You'd tell your technical mate, hey, something's wrong with this. He'd go and look, and he'd look in the code, and he didn't see it in the page, in the web page, didn't see anything, right? So, you know, that's obviously very bad. I mean, this is ridiculous. And obviously, it's even more ridiculous when blockchains actually start running on the cloud themselves. Like, so for example, most Ethereum nodes are run by Infura on Amazon Web Services. And obviously, either a malicious person at Amazon or a malicious person at Infura could actually could actually make these nodes return malicious data that acts like a sort of SQL injection attack in reverse, put some bad data into the web page that interacts with MetaMask and steals the tokens again in some way, right? So that's bad. You know, it's just the whole thing. And of course, it's not censorship resistant. I mean, look what happened with Parler. Amazon Web Services decided that, you know, they didn't like, you know, Donald Trump supporters and the sort of alt-right and so on and so forth. But, you know, you can say what you will about those people, and that may or may not be your own politics. But most people in blockchain believe that a key purpose is ensuring that sans being a terrorist organization or something like that, you know, you should be able to create some kind of social media that doesn't get censored because someone doesn't like your politics. Now, the sad thing is, you know, if Amazon Web Services wanted to, they could switch off pretty much the entire Ethereum ecosystem. They could probably reboot it, but, you know, they just switch off Infura. But, you know, when the dApps themselves are actually built on Amazon or whatever it is, obviously there's no censorship resistance, right? I mean, the fact that they might be making a few calls to blockchain on the back end is meaningless. Like, the bulk of the data and the processing sits on Amazon, right? And Amazon can switch them off anytime they feel like it. So, you know, we believe that's the wrong architecture. And the good news is that on the internet computer blockchain, you don't need cloud, because efficiency has been increased. I mean, by huge amounts. We're talking about 100,000 to 100 million X through advanced mathematics. And, you know, this blockchain runs at web speed with you know, web levels of efficiency. You know, code on the blockchain can serve web, so you don't need like to put the website on Amazon Web Services. It's infinitely scalable. The costs have been, you know, reduced by absolutely incredible amounts. I mean, for example, and to give you some practical numbers, a gigabyte of data, right, is like 300 phone photos, 17 minutes of phone video. It's about 1/350th of all the Bitcoin transactions. It's about 1/4 millionth of 1/4 millionth of all the data that's added to net. To Facebook every day, right? But for the purposes of Web3, let's just focus on the photos, right? You know, it's 300 phone photos. Okay, so 1 gigabyte of data on Ethereum today, it goes up and down, but last time I looked, it's about $300 million, right? And it would also take you, it was forever to upload that gigabyte of Ethereum. Solana, you know, obviously has reliability issues and so on and so forth, but, you know, has brought the price down. I mean, it's about $800,000 on Solana for a gigabyte, right? On the internet computer, it's about $5 a gigabyte a year paid in these things called cycles, which are a bit like gas on Ethereum. So, you know, there's a huge reduction. And so, that, you know, that to store one phone photo on Ethereum costs you $1 million. It would also take you several days to upload it. Solana, again, you know, I don't know what would happen to Solana if lots of people started storing phone photos up there, because it's really built for these just very lightweight transactions.
Well, it makes me wonder, like, so if Solana is built by Coinbase, because it goes down every time the market.
Yeah, well, it's designed, it's very optimized for lightweight transactions, and I think that's what developers are having problems with now. You know, you can do about 3,000 transactions a day as long as they're very lightweight. But if once those transactions involve, you know, complex smart contract operations, right, it has problems. But you know, let's just say it can handle lots and lots of photos being uploaded. It can't, but let's just say it could. The cost of uploading, you know, one photo is like $2,666. I mean,
that's crazy.
On the internet computer, it's like 1.6 cents, right?
Well, let me ask you this. So where does the internet computer get its resources from? Is it just a bunch of people that are donating their spare computer resources, whether it's CPU or memory?
No,
how is this thing actually built?
Yeah, so the internet computer has been sort of constructed by a very, very large R&D operation that's been running for years. You know, we first raised serious money in February 2017, and I've just been growing it since then. And, you know, people can check it out on the team page at Definity.org, or, you know, probably on LinkedIn by searching people. We actually, I think, employ, for example, more famous cryptographers than just about any other organization in the world. And, you know, but it's not just them, though. You know, there's you know, brilliant computer science researchers and very senior engineers and so on. And, you know, over time, we you know, learned how to make research and engineering work together in a very effective way, and have created a very sophisticated system. And that system is a ground up rethink of blockchain. Nearly everything's different. Okay. And it involves, and it's powered by a lot of, you know, new mathematics in the form of new cryptography. So, but the whole thing is a complete rethink. So you can't really call it proof of work, and you can't really call it proof of stake. The network itself is hosted by special node machines, a bit like the internet's hosted by routers. These are sort of machines built to a community specification. And you know, there are different, you know, specifications. The new specifications will come out. So it's a heterogeneous network, but
sure.
Those node machines could, you know, they're like specialized servers, right? They don't have. It's a bit like, you know, the kind of machines that Google would use. They don't have like redundant power supplies because the redundancy is in the blockchain itself. They're just optimized for performance, but they're still expensive. You know, cost about $10,000 each, I guess, at the moment, and currently the network uses something called deterministic decentralization, which means that the, you know, owner operators of these node machines, we call them node providers, have to be identified. And the reason is the network reduces replication of data and computation while maintaining the availability, liveness, security guarantees that you'd expect from a blockchain by combining nodes into subnet blockchains, which add capacity, right, in a very careful way.
I get a lot of questions almost every day, in fact, saying, I've got $10,000, $20,000, I want to start mining Bitcoin. You know, what do I do? And I say, stop. Don't go throw that money into Bitcoin. You're never going to make your money back. In fact, one Bitcoin miner is going to cost you $10,000, which is, you know, 10 times as much as what it used to. But can they take that $10,000 and build themselves a node machine and apply to Dfinity?
Well, the first thing is you don't have to apply to Dfinity. That was, unfortunately, that's a misconception that results from my own poor communication skills. Firstly, everyone should know that Dfinity is basically an R&D operation, and you know, we have a very thin comms, marketing, business development team, and that's something that has to change. Like most blockchain operations, like 90% comms, marketing, business development, and then 10%, you know, the rest, including R&D. We're like 90% R&D, and so sometimes our costs, comms and marketing and so on, isn't the best, and that's something you're going to see getting better, especially, you know, over this.
That's okay. It's still early.
It is still early, but you know, we're aware it's kind of ridiculous. We have this, like, by far the biggest R&D operation in blockchain, and it's been running for years, and it has all of this incredible new technology, but we aren't necessarily very good at communicating it and selling it to the world. Selling to the world what it is.
The key takeaway from that is to build something that changes the world is really, 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 really hard.
Ha! Yeah, I mean, of course, like, you know, I mean, if you get into the internet computer, it becomes, I mean, I encourage anyone to do it. You'll quickly find areas that are just impossibly complex. So I'm chief scientist and devise, you know, the overall architecture and you know, concepts but you know, there are plenty of areas now which I couldn't possibly fully understand. And one example would be the chain key cryptography that actually powers the internet computer. Like I know how the individual components, you know, cryptographic components, what they do, and you know, I ask for many of them, but I, you know, the how that new cryptography works is pretty tough for anyone to understand who's not a professional cryptographer. So you know, that's an inevitable facet, I think. You know, I mean, Bitcoin's the merit of Bitcoin is one of the key merits of Bitcoin is simplicity, right? You know, anyone who dedicates sufficient time can understand Bitcoin end to end. And there's obviously advantages to that. But at the same time, you know, Bitcoin's, you know, addressing a pretty, you know, straightforward goal. It wants to be digital gold.
Let me ask you this. So as a founder, as a scientist, as a dreamer, this thing is your baby. You've literally dedicated this portion of your life to building it. The last thing you want is to turn it over to the community that's full of, you know, frogs from 4chan that just come and wreck the whole thing. just for the lulls, you know? How do you know when is the right time as a founder to turn it over to the DAO and say, okay, world, here's the keys to the car?
I think people will see that it works very well. I mean, the internet computer is the only blockchain that runs under the full control of a DAO. And it's wonderful. You're seeing that digital democracy, really become more vibrant. I mean, it's digital democracy in motion. There are debates about, the ways the kind of proposals should adopt and reject, and that's natural. But the network nervous system is designed in a very kind of clever way. It involves, anybody in the world can participate. You just get the ICP token and stake it inside, creating something called a voting neuron. You have to determine how long it will take to get the ICP locked inside back, right? It's called a dissolve delay. And the longer it takes, you can configure anywhere from 6 months to eight years. The longer you configure it to be, the more your voting power and the more the voting rewards. And then when you've created, your voting neuron or voting neurons, you can configure them. You can either, make them vote manually, or you can configure them to vote automatically by following other neurons, right? So essentially users typically delegate, trust and expertise by making them follow other neurons. And for the most part, they vote automatically. Neurons can't vote automatically on motion proposals, which are a special kind of proposal, but there are, many tens of proposals that you can vote on automatically. But of course, on the fly, you can redelegate trust and expertise. But for the most part, you work like that. So this means that, the network nervous system is actually able to process very large numbers of proposals every day, and it does so. And the delegation of trust and expertise and the incentive that the lockup creates for neuron owners to vote in ways that promote the future success of the network pretty much guarantees that the network nervous system is pretty sensible. Like, it's adopting proposals with a fair degree of wisdom. And I've even found myself in situations where I voted one way, and then, the proposal that I voted positively on has been rejected because other neurons vote otherwise. And then, first I thought, well, damn, and then later on I found that actually, those other people found that, they'd invested more time than I was able to in investigating and evaluating a proposal, and they'd found fair reasons to vote to reject it. So, the network nervous system as an advanced DAO that actually controls the entire internet computer blockchain network has been working extraordinarily well. And it's made it possible to evolve the network in real time, upgrade the network, fix things, have debates within the community about various things and get them resolved. And the network's just been sort of working very well under its, governance. And so I think the same thing's gonna happen for, dApps and services. If you take something like OpenChat, when it fully decentralizes and hands control to a service nervous system, which again is another kind of advanced DAO build using the same technology, I think we're going to see it working pretty well. And, the core developers who credit, been working on OpenChat this far will become members of the community that themselves holds voting token, governance tokens, and participate and create voting neurons and so on. And they'll be able to update and update the service just as well as they can at the moment. But fundamentally, it'll be the community has control. And if the service nervous system, for example, auctions governance tokens to raise funds for the further development of something like OpenChat, those funds will sit inside that service nervous system under the control of the community. And that's the beauty of having an autonomous system, right? You can now even do community fundraising without it being an ICO, because you're not fundraising. An autonomous, decentralized autonomous organization is fundraising, and it keeps the
interesting
funds. So that I think is the future. We're going to see an explosion, I think, in sort of Cambrian explosion of truly decentralized Web3 dApps and services on the internet computer.
Well, Dominic, that's amazing, everything that you built over there. Thank you so much from humanity for giving us a better alternative than fucking Facebook. So I can't wait to have you back on. But if people need to digest more right now, where can they go follow you? Where can they learn more about Dfinity?
Well, I mean, you know, if you go to Dfinity.org, there's a section called Community Conversations, so you can see what's coming up. There's a section called How It Works, which tries to sort of break down the various components of the network and explain how they work in different levels of detail. There's, you know, there's a Discord. There's a sort of growing, I think like 2 or 3 months ago now, you know, there were more than 1,000 developers building on the internet computer. So that's growing organically and quickly. So
that's great.
There are different, there are communities you can connect with, albeit it's early. There's also something, you know, called the Internet Computer Association. You can find that at internetcomputer.org. That has a dashboard that gives you stats about the internet computer. And yeah, you know, just get going, exploring some of the things that have been built. Discover, which is like a sort of Reddit on the internet computer, is a thing called Tagger, which I only came across the other day, which is really cool.
Or Open Chat, huh?
Or Open Chat, yeah. OC.app. Discover is DCSBR.com. Tagger is TAGGR. There's loads of stuff. There's even Entrepot, which is like NFTs. There's these kind of like cool wallets you can get. Albeit you don't need a wallet, it has a thing called internet identity, which means you can log into a dApps on the internet computer just using a fingerprint sensor, a face ID, your phone, securely. Just explore that. I mean, there's so many, I don't have time to keep up with them. I know the first DEX has just gone live, so some of the features that really enabled DeFi to work properly are just being enabled. You know, they've only been live since May.
So quite the rabbit hole. This has been a great high-level overview. Dominic, thank you so much for your time. And we can't wait to continue the conversation.
Yeah, look forward to it. Thanks.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.